to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Almost halfway done the program. A little more than halfway done. Halfway still to go. I'm enjoying the afternoon with all you gentlemen, I must say.
I'm enjoying this Pearl Jam. Great band. One of the greatest bands of all time, in my opinion.
You have a lot of strong opinions, so, you know.
Yeah.
He's a very strong guy who has strong opinions. I've once seen him lift something over his head. It was
an entire horse. I've picked up a horse and just lifted it right over my head. Then I ate it after.
Can it not even go?
It's absurd.
See, even Richard chimes in.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about the 72 and 87 Team Canadas, and now we're going to talk about the 02 and 2010 Team Canadas. Some people on Twitter are talking about the 04-05 World Juniors. That was definitely an unbelievable team, but we're going to leave out that team for the time being.
We were there in Grand Forks.
Yes, a lot of people were there in Grand Forks.
That was one of the best ever.
It was a tournament that they should have just canceled from the start because everybody knew Team Canada was going to win. It wasn't even a competition. That was just a fabulous team. We want to hear from you. Keep sending us your comments at Illegal Curve on Twitter. What team do you think is best? 72 Summit Series team, 87 Team Canada, Canada Cup, or either the 02 or 2010 Olympic team, and with our apologies to the 06 Olympic team in turn. And they didn't make the cut on this one.
Well, the funny thing is, Drew, it's great that people are tweeting at Illegal Curve because, you know, this gets people fired up, and it should get people fired up. It's different eras. You know, people that were alive for the 72 Summit Series and remember that, how good that team was versus 87 versus 2002. I mean, it creates great debate because they're all unique tournaments, you know, with different set of circumstances. Obviously, in 2002, everybody remembers the Gretzky speech and how we hadn't won since 1952. So I love that people are getting into this.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm a bit younger than you guys, so I wasn't around for, you know, 87 or 91 Canada Cup. And for me, you know, international hockey started. There was the 96 World Cup where Canada lost to the U.S.
What year were you born?
I'm not going to say on air. Well, we're in 87, so how could I experience
the
87?
It's really depressing.
How could I experience the 87 Canada Cup? I was born then. But 96 and the 98 with a heartbreaking loss in Nagano. So 02 was really, you know, it was 50 years since they had won a gold medal. And for me, that was the first, like, big international tournament win that I was able to experience. So that was one of my personal favorite teams.
That's fine. That's a good contribution from producer Remus.
Hey, I'm a go to mic here.
We appreciate it. No, absolutely. You know, you look at the 02 team, and, you know, Eddie Belfour is one of the goaltenders there. The other goaltenders, of course, are Cujo, Curtis Joseph, and Martin Brodeur. And the reason why I don't think the 02 team gets the nod, in my opinion, is had the Swedes not choked against Belarus, I think Team Canada loses to the Swedes in the semifinals that year.
Interesting. That's
remember, the Swedes had dominated us in the preliminary round.
Matt Sundin and all that, yeah.
And I mean, and if they you look at the Swedish roster that year, that was a very talented team. And I think that they, you know, it still boggles my mind that they lost to Belarus and the famous goal off Tommy Salo's head,
yeah, right,
and everything else. But if, you know, if the Swedes take care of Belarus as they should have, I don't know if Canada gets to that gold medal game.
Well, it's an interesting question. Obviously, we mentioned Matt Sundin had, like you mentioned before, Sweden had beat Canada in either the first or second preliminary game, and they had,
I think it was the first game.
First game.
Yeah, 5-2.
They beat Canada handily. Yep. Then I believe Canada went out and beat Finland, but just squeaked by them. And then I think the Canadians tied the Czechs, I thought.
Yeah,
but
there was a tie in there.
Yeah, and that was the final round robin game. And then Gretzky came out and made a speech, I think, at that point in time.
It was after
that. No, it was U.S.
Before
Canada-U.S. 2-2.
Oh, yeah, okay. You're right. Canada tied the U.S., and then Gretzky came out with that speech and took all of the pressure off of his team by saying that there's more pressure on our country, obviously that being Canada, than other countries. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, comparing the 2002-2010 teams, they're very much different. To me, the 2010 team, which was obviously 2 years ago and led by Sidney Crosby's golden goal, that to me signified the changing of the guard. You know, you had a new wave of players. In 2002, you know, we were coming off that 98 Nagano debacle where we lost to the Czech Republic.
We were talking about that off air earlier, joking about the decision. I mean, still boggles the mind to keep Gretzky on the bench during the shootout.
Right. So now this was the first year that he was the GM. And then, you know, obviously Gretzky was the coach in 2000, pardon me, the GM in 2006 as well. They didn't do so well there.
Yeah.
But the 2002 team, you know, you had they started off with Curtis Joseph as the number one goalie, and then Brodeur came in. But the collection of talent that you had there was really incredible. And you guys remember the gold medal game, you know, talking about, you know, this series versus, or pardon me, this game versus the 87 best of three. It was only a one-game final, and the Canada dominated the U.S. You had Joe Sakic and Jerome McGinley flying around out there, and, you know, we just dominated the U.S. in that game, but... you know, comparing.
But I mean, you got to really keep in mind when we say we dominated the U.S., we did. But the U.S. really played an extra game more than Canada did in that tournament. Because remember, the semifinals, the U.S. had to barely hold on to beat the Russians. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Canada really could sleepwalk and beat Belarus. So I mean, Canada almost got a bye into the finals thanks to the Swedes' incompetence.
The big thing for me about the 2002 was. It was almost like a revenge for what happened to Canada in the 96 World Cup.
Yep.
You know, good like in my good head, I remember like when the Canadians beat the Americans, I remember thinking to myself, well, at least it makes up for that terrible, you know, showing in 96 for the World Cup. And so that to me was the big significance. I mean, obviously it was 50 years and all that, and it was huge to win the you know, the gold medal. But I just remember thinking like, wow, it was nice way to get some revenge back, some little payback back for 96.
Well, it was towards the end of an era, a couple of years before the lockout. You had guys that had been in the 96 World Cup. Remember, the U.S. team still had guys like Mike Richter, Mike Badano, Tony Amonte, all of those guys, Jeremy Roenick, Darian Hatcher, all those guys versus, you know, Eric Lindros and all these guys, Adam Foote, that were on the 96 team. So, I mean, it really was a lot. That was more about the rivalry between Canada and the U.S. But, you know, I always think of that, you know, that speech that Wayne Gretzky made. And, I mean, you got to keep in mind, too, Mario Lemieux was not in the prime of his career. That was one of his last years in the NHL, that tournament. But you still had, you know, other players that... the collection of talent was unbelievable. You had, you know, Jerome McGinley. You know, the list goes on and on. Well, Sakic.
I mean, it can be argued the best player on the 0-2 Team Canada forward was Theo Fleury.
And what's funny about, he was very good in that tournament.
He was terrific for Team
Canada.
He was very
good in that tournament, and they weren't sure that they were going to pick him because all of what was all going on with his substance abuse problems.
Behind the scenes things, but Theo Fleury came through and was really one of the was a tremendous asset for Team Canada in that tournament.
I remember he was great. I remember Simone Gagné was great with Sakic and Aginla. But I think Sakic was by far and away was the best player in that tournament.
I'm not saying that Fleury was the best. I'm saying he was a key component of that tournament that people don't, you know, that people sometimes forget his influence on that team because of all the everything else that we now associate with Theo Fleury and his courageous fight, you know, against the substance abuse issues and against Graham James and everything along those lines.
So that's a very good point. I mean, you look at
it's good to remember Theo Fleury for his on ice contributions as well.
Yes, no, you're right. And when you think about Canadian teams, we don't always have the most skill. I mean, we might have some of the most skilled players, but overall, you talk about Sweden, and that year they had Niklas Lidström and Alfredsson and Sundin. They were a lot of good players. The Sedins, I believe, were on that team. They were 19 or 20 years old at the time. They were drafted in 99, so they must have been 21 or 22. But, you know, the guys like Brendan Shanahan, the guys like Theo Fleury, the guys like Ryan Smith, a.k.a. Captain Canada. I mean, these guys wanted to win that tournament. And, you know, it's... looking back at the 2010 team, obviously, you know, Brodeur was the goalie again, and they won the gold medal, and Crosby got one of the most historic goals of all time. But that 2002 team, I'm going to have to pick as the better of those two teams. I'm not saying it's as good as the 87 team, but out of those two teams, I think that was more significant.
72, 87, 02, or 2010 before we go to break. Dave Minuk.
I'm going with 87.
Ezzy?
You know, I was thinking about this really hard when we thought about doing this yesterday. I have to go with 1987. And like Dave, for me, that was the first big international tournament that we saw because obviously we weren't around for 72. But, you know, Dale Hawerchuk, obviously a Winnipeg Jet, you know, him just being part of that iconic goal, Mario Lemieux from Wayne Gretzky. I don't think we've ever seen a collection of forwards like that before. And I don't think we've ever seen that high level of international play like that.
I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer in this, and I think the answers we come up with are definitely colored by our own personal experiences. the only drawback for me to say the only reason that I don't think it's 87 is because of the weaknesses on defense after Coffey and Bork.
So Drew just told us there were no wrong answers and then just told us our answers
were
wrong.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong. It's a matter of opinion. That's all I'm saying is it's a matter of opinion. But you look at the defense on 87, and after Coffey and Bork, it's not really what you would describe as a who's who of NHL defensemen. Then you look at the 0-2 team and how balanced they are from top to bottom. It's hard to really pick out a weakness, and partly because, out of the sake of discussion and partly because I believe it, I think I'm going to go with the 0-2 Team Canada.
But as you said, there really isn't a wrong answer.
There really is no wrong answer.
What about
answer.
Remo, what is your pick?
I think, the 72 is actually, I think, is the obvious pick because the political implications and just the hatred.
Yeah.
But for me personally,
pick. I thought you were taking 72.
Can't overlook 72 is I think what you I'm can saying overlook, as a tournament.
I think that's the consensus pick, but I think it really goes down to personal preference, and I love the 0-2 team. I think they have a lot of classic players, a lot of Hall of Famers, and it was, a really giant win for them.
If you want to do it based on Hall of Famers, I think that the 0-2 team is going to have probably the most Hall of Famers, and 72 will be right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And 76, which we didn't even discuss.
Right.
What we're saying is it's an embarrassment of riches
for
Team
Canada.
I was
just going to say, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're really, as you said earlier, there's no wrong answer. Every team is fantastic. Every team has its moments,
Mm-hmm.
So
no, like you said, it's a good problem to have, a high-class problem. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on the program in about 10 minutes' time, Kalen Qualley from the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program is going to join us. And then at 2:30, we switch to the Illegal Pitch Baseball Show, where we talk to Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, here on TSN 1290. Goldeyes sweeping the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks yesterday. They're through to the American Association Finals, which get underway here on TSN 1290 Tuesday night. Some tweets regarding what we've been talking about, which Team Canada is the best. At MK Scud tweets at Illegal Curve and says, the 2002 team for sure. Gold medal game when Bob Cole's voice cracks when Sakic scores the breakaway goal. Tears me up every time. And that's true. That's a famous goal. Surely this is it.
Yeah.
Bob Cole,
Joel Sakic.
That was terrible.
What? That was bad?
No, you know what?
That wasn't bad.
I'm going to give Rima an 8 out of 10 on that.
You're behind there. I thought you would have pulled up the Bob Cole's call of the game and aired that as opposed to you doing an imitation of Bob Cole.
What else? What
Fair
else?
Enough.
Mike B, at Beller79, good friend of ours.
It's my boy, Beller79.
That's your boy, Ezzy. I believe you inducted him into the Illegal Curve Hall of Fan fame. Is that right?
What we did is we gave him gold member status. It's an exclusive group. Ali K is in there.
Yeah.
If you become an Illegal Curve gold member, that's kind of like you get to roll with us. You're a close personal friend of mine is what that means. And Dave M's, obviously.
I don't think I've achieved that status yet.
No, absolutely. Nope. Drew's still silver status, actually.
Exactly. He votes for the 2002 team as well. Lemieux, Yzerman, Sakic, Brodeur, again, list goes on. You really need not say more about that. Number of votes for the 05 juniors. John Waldman, another friend of the show, is about the 05 World Juniors. At Turnbull Dave. Dave Turnbull, another friend, says, what about the 05 juniors? Basically the same team as the 2010 Olympic team.
That's a good point. And Andrew Ladd, captain of the Jets, was on that team.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the tournament that everybody from Winnipeg drove down to Grand Forks. I remember that tournament. Everybody drove down from Winnipeg to Grand Forks for that tournament. And one night there was that huge snowstorm that shut the highway. So nobody could come back because people would just drive down for the game and turn around and come right back. But there was that huge snowstorm, and everybody got. I think they had to open up a gym or something in Grand Forks. People were stranded there overnight. It was,
And they ran out of beer. I think.
No, that was at your house. You ran out of beer.
Oh, I ran out of beer after the tournament because I was so excited. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. And vote for the 87 team. Saying, two of the five all-time greats on that team with Lemieux and Gretzky in their prime. That comes from Shane O'Jack, who tweets at Illegal Curve. Really just, everybody's got a different opinion on this one for the most part.
Yep.
None of them are wrong.
No.
And I'm sure the truth is, I think there would also be a lot of votes for 72. I think there might be a bit of an age gap on Twitter versus the 72 aficionados.
Not many people on Twitter that remember the 72 game, with the exception of Drew.
I was waiting. I saw that one come from a mile away. Did we get that bus audio yet about the bus driving over one of us? Is that something that we have yet?
We don't have any sound.
Yeah, it's coming. Hold on.
It's coming. Oh, well, if it's not queued up, it's just it's just awkward at that point. Yeah.
Oh. Was that you just getting?
That was a the bus getting. I thought Drew got blown up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that like, wasn't a bus. I thought it was going to be the line from Speed. The bus is out of control. Something like that.
It's a better one.
Yeah, we'll work on that for next week. Anyways, when we need to throw you under the bus next week, we'll do that one instead. So really, these are the barroom conversations to have. 72, 87, yep. 2010, 2002, whatever it may be. Another one comes in. At Farms9 says the 87 team, the best of three, really added to his experience in appreciating that team. And to be honest, I do like the best of three aspect.
There is something to be said for that. The fact that you're going, you have to win two of three. You can't just, it's not just a one game elimination. Because if, one team falls asleep, generally these teams don't fall asleep. But if they do, you could have a snoozer, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's also worth mentioning, and there was a few articles this week, pardon me, last week actually about this, but you remember back when there was a lockout, there was the World Cup in the summer after the summer of 2004, the Canada won the World Cup, and people were talking about how that didn't make the year off as bad. And this year, obviously, I don't know if they're
that
ever
2004 gonna... World Cup was the most absurd thing in a long time for me. There was no need for it. 2002, we had the Olympics.
Right.
2006, we had the Olympics. Yeah, let's throw in a World Cup, for no very good reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Olympics have replaced the World Cup. A lot of people don't think the World Cup's ever coming back.
Well, if they stop going to the Olympics,
they'll bring it back.
They'll bring back the World Cup.
Exactly.
Because people will want to see a best on best hockey tournament on a every 4 years.
Not every 2 years, though.
No, every 4 years. Even, I'd be fine with every 6 years also, to be perfect, but I think you'd probably miss a generation, so you probably can't
You'd have to do it every 4 years.
Every 4 years. That way, if the best players are at their absolute peak for a 10-year time, that means they'd get to play in two World Cup or two Olympics, whatever it may be.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, so personally, that's fine for me, but don't start bringing back World Cups if the best Canadian team players are playing in the Olympics.
Well, I think, Drew, the point wasn't so much to bring it back, but it was that now that there's no hockey, and we obviously have had some forms of hockey. There was the Canada-Russia Hockey Challenge. Obviously, Winnipeg Jets draft pick Mark Scheifele was in that. But it was the point that, it kind of made the year off not as bad.
You're saying back in 04.
Right.
That's your opinion, and again, I'm not going to say your opinion is wrong, but I did disagree with you. People that were rooting and going crazy for Canada winning that. Didn't we beat the Finns or somebody in the final?
Yeah, good memory.
Yeah. I just couldn't have really cared less about that tournament because I didn't understand what the purpose of it was, aside from making money for people.
No, remember what the purpose was? It was to make that beautiful, remember that weird trophy that they had? Do you remember that?
I sort of vaguely remember
it. It was like a weird, it almost looked like a light fixture or like a bowl with these, maybe we'll tweet that out. It was actually a little bit controversial that, that was made by, I don't know, maybe Frank Jerry or Gary, that famous architect made it. I don't know. But no, you're right. I mean, the Olympics have become the highest stage for international hockey, so there was no need for one in 2012.
2002. Or, 2004.
No, I'm talking about there was one in 04, not in 2012.
Yeah. No, I definitely didn't think there was going to be any need for that this year, and I'm thankful that they didn't have one. But, it's one of those things, the World Cup, the Canada Cup, the biggest ones of them all, the 72 and the 87, will never be replicated simply because of the political dynamic that existed in the world at the time.
Right.
And there's nothing that I don't think we're ever going to get back to a point, well, never say never, but in my generation, in my lifetime, in your lifetime, in Dave's lifetime, Dave's, by the way, ending a lot sooner than mine.
I wouldn't go that far.
That was morbid.
I was kidding. It's I was saying because you're older than me.
I know, but I'm a little healthier than you.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm going to say a lot healthier, actually.
I don't know about that.
The Leo Kerr Fitness Challenge is taking place next week.
I'll tell you what, we know who's going to lose that one for sure, though.
This guy,
right here. As he somehow lost already in the fitness challenge.
I don't know. I'll surprise you. I can do quite a few burpees.
He's a very hard worker.
Yeah, Richie knows that Ezzy is a very hard worker when he gets into the gym.
Let's end it. How about we just end it here as opposed to going any further with this? When we come back, Caitlin Qualley of Pass It Forward, the hockey equipment program, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 2 hours down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on The Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend. He's the founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program, Kalen Qualley. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing very well, thank you.
I'm enjoying the debate today.
Well, okay, you were listening to it. What's your opinion?
I mean, there's a lot of like contextual arguments and stuff to be had, but I'm going to have to go with 87 just based on the idea of having Lemieux and Gretzky on the same team.
You can't go wrong with that.
Kalen is in the same corner as myself and Ezzy.
So does that mean you guys are automatically right?
We are all right.
And I'm wrong.
Yeah. Also known as the good side.
Yeah.
I love the Summit series, how you guys kind of discuss the context of that, because I don't think a lot of people are really familiar with that. So that was solid, too.
Well,
but I got to ask, have any of you guys watched the movie?
Which one?
Like the documentary?
Canada-Russia 72. I think it was on CBC a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I caught the majority of it or whatever. I mean, it was, you know, anytime you're talking about hockey in that sort of context, like we said, you know, with all the political drama surrounding it, you know, most people won't turn away from that on the television at any opportunity.
No, and especially when it stars Jerry D.
Of course. You can't go wrong with Jerry D, famous comedian. He's appeared numerous times at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, one of the sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Very nice.
You like that plug? There you go.
Nice plug.
Kalen, buddy, it's September, and September means it's time for the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program to get back started. You know, before we get into the nuts and bolts of it, maybe you can give some background as to how the program came about and, you know, what the purpose of the program is.
For sure, man. This is a year where kids are registering for hockey, and parents kind of start digging through whatever storage of hockey equipment they might have left from years past. And it's a perfect time for a program like Pass It Forward that aims to collect used hockey gear and kind of redistribute it and make sure it gets used, and specifically by kids that might otherwise not be able to afford hockey equipment of their own. So as you alluded to, a little background info on the program, this is the fourth season for Pass It Forward, and it continues to grow and gains momentum, I find, just because it's a really relatable cause here in Winnipeg. It's the most popular sport in this city, and I mean, it's a perpetual thing where kids are constantly growing out of their hockey equipment, so we just try to encourage parents to donate it and try and make sure it goes towards a good cause.
You know, Kalen, you mentioned that this is the fourth year for Pass It Forward, and I remember when you started that, we were both going to Red River taking the Creative Communications program, and obviously this program has grown a lot. We've had you on, I believe this is the third, probably maybe even the fourth year that we've had you on. How specifically has the program grown, and what are some of the goals, the new goals that you're setting for the program this year?
It's grown in a lot of different ways. The very first season, we had a really good base because we had some really significant partners. Of course, probably the most important one would be Perth Dry Cleaners, because they've served as drop-off centers for the equipment each of the 4 years. And it's grown to a point where just after our second season, we pursued trying to gain charitable status so that it can become a more permanent program. And also, for example, if someone really believes in this cause but they don't have equipment, they can make a monetary donation and help the program grow that way. But aside from that, I just found that we have found a way to collect just more equipment each season. And we found a really great partner, a partner that has a hockey program of their own that's growing each year. So we're going to be working with the Winnipeg Jets Hockey Academy, which operates out of MCS Iceplex, and it's the program that puts it's a school program that works with inner city schools in Winnipeg, and They do a great job of distributing the equipment that we pass on to them, and they put kids on ice. So we found a lot of stability now in our fourth year, and just keeps getting bigger.
So, Kaylin, just for people who don't know, the website is passitforward.ca. We're featuring it on illegalcurve.com morning papers throughout September, so people can go to our site and click on it and get to you. The site's a great site. You guys have a Twitter as well. The one thing I'm wondering is, what's the reaction that you, do you see the kids when you give the when you distribute the equipment to them? Do you get a chance to meet them? And if so, what is the reaction they have when they're getting this equipment from you?
I can't say I've gotten a chance to firsthand distribute the equipment to the kids. I've gotten a chance to kind of see the equipment in action and got to see some of these programs where the kids actually get to use it.
Okay.
And that in itself is a really great experience. One of my favorite experiences through this program was receiving just an anonymous request from a principal in Nunavut, and just had the story about he's a foster kid who you just go to the rink and watch his classmates play hockey every day, but couldn't afford the equipment. And Pass It Forward was able to set him up. His name was Alan. He's nine years old, and we managed to set him up with equipment. But it's just like little stories like that make this a really rewarding program.
That's terrific. Those stories definitely make it all worthwhile. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Kaylin Qualley. He's one of the founders and the organizer of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. You can find out more about the program at passitforward.ca, and the Twitter account is the same, at passitforwardca is where if you want more information about the program. Now, Kaylin, you know, obviously you've mentioned that Perth's Dry Cleaners has been a sponsor of this program since its inception. You know, I happen to know, you know, going back talking to you and through my own personal history, this started off as a one-day hockey equipment drive, and now it's expanded into being a whole month-long program. Is that right?
Yep, you got it. It was that's right. That first year, it was just a single day of donation, and you saw firsthand it was almost an overwhelming amount of support, and just an incredible amount of equipment that came in on that one day, which just spoke volumes about how easy it was for people in Winnipeg to relate to it. And Perth's, through their cooperation and eagerness to help the program, they've expanded it to a month of donations. So until the end of September, well, I'll say it as many times as I can, you can bring your equipment to any Perth's Dry Cleaners location in Winnipeg.
Kaylin, you know, for the people that are, you know, just getting to know this program, just tuning in, you know, people are going to obviously want to either donate equipment or possibly make a financial donation. As far as the hockey equipment itself goes, is there anything specific that, you know, the Pass It Forward program would be looking for, or are they basically just looking for any type of equipment that people that might be laying around someone's house or they're just not using anymore?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it there, as it's pretty much anything you might have lying around. There's a very good chance that we'll be able to find someone that can use it. Like, I'm sure people might wonder if they've quit playing hockey recently and an older age, if for example, a 15-year-old kid can use a pair of senior-sized skates. Well, if you've seen a 15-year-old kid playing hockey, he's about the same height as you and I. So for sure, anything you might have lying around the house, junior-sized, senior-sized, we'll find someone to use it.
So there's nothing goes to waste. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it.
So Kaylin, just so people know that while giving just for its own reasons is a good thing, there's also something the Pass It Forward organization is giving away. Is that not right?
Yeah, you got it. Every year we have a donation prize. And so every time you donate something to Perth, you can enter the donation contest. This year we're giving away a team autographed portrait of the opening face-off from last year.
The Winnipeg Jets.
In years prior, we had autographed jerseys, Jonathan Toews, Andrew Ladd, Mike Richards. So, every year there's a little bit of incentive, extra incentive to donate. So
at what point are you going to be giving away a signed picture of the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew?
as soon as I get one in my hands, I can make sure that that's included.
Okay.
That's a famous last words right there, Kaylin, because you know you're going to get that picture sooner rather than later now. Kaylin, we'll let it wrap up on this. Just, you know, one more time, where can people drop off their equipment? And if they're interested in being able to access the equipment, how do they go about doing that?
Accessing the equipment, there's contact information on our website, passiveforward.ca. But if it's just donations you're interested in taking part in, then it's any of the 19 Perth's dry cleaners locations in Winnipeg. It's pretty difficult not to stumble upon one driving around the city. So yeah, make sure you get it there by the end of September, and we can assure you it's equipment that's going to go to good use.
Kaylin Qualley from the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. The website, again, is passitforward.ca. They're also on Twitter, @PassItForwardCA. Kaylin, terrific job as always with Pass It Forward. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and best of luck with the program.
Okay, I appreciate the support immensely, guys. Have a great day, and I hope you guys continue to support the program. And everyone out there listening. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kaylin.
Thanks, Kaylin. We'll see you soon, buddy. Let's go to break. Kaylin Qualley from the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. Just a terrific program. One we're very proud to be a part of here with the Illegal Curve team. You're listening to TSN 1290. Much more still to come. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Kaylin Qualley of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. Terrific program, as I mentioned. If you missed any of that interview or any of the interviews prior to that, you can download the show on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. We'll also post it at illegalcurve.com. Remus, when are you going to have the show up this week? You're on the record right now. We're putting you on the hot
spot. On the spot. It'll be up in time for Monday morning, hopefully sometime Sunday night, maybe after the football games.
Dave, do you agree with that?
He's the guy who does it.
Okay.
Fine. I'll maybe drink football. I like it, but I can't make any promises.
If he wants to get into the house to watch football,
he's going to have that show up. Yeah. So, but a guaranteed is by the time Sunday night rolls around, in time for Monday morning?
Always in time for Monday morning on your drive to work or walk to work, bus to work, anytime.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by The Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. The Cheer Bar and Grill is your home for not only Monday night football, but also Thursday night football this year. There are Thursday night games each and every week this year during the NFL season. So make The Cheer Bar and Grill your home for the best of in football. They have some great new HD screens up there, two giant screens, great food and drink specials. So The Cheer Bar and Grill in the heart of Osborne Village is your home for the NFL and all the best sports in addition to football, especially hockey, once that's back up and running.
Little known fact.
NHL news and notes.
Little known fact is I'm cutting you off.
I didn't realize Remus was coming in with that bumper, but this involves Remus. Little known fact. Michael Remus had 100 pulled pork sandwiches last year at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Loves sure, the pulled pork sandwich.
That's a lot of pulled pork.
Is that not true, Reem? He's talking via sound effects.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's the best way. You know, part of this NHL news and notes, so some odds and ends from around the NHL world. One of the reports that came out earlier this week, related to the CBA, but not really in terms of the negotiations, is that the NHL wants total control over realignment, scheduling, and the playoff format. Prior to this report coming out, the NHL and NHLPA had to sort of work in conjunction in order to make any of those changes. We saw what happened when the NHL tried to realign earlier in the year. The NHLPA put up the roadblocks and said, not without our consent, and we're not giving you our consent. That was sort of the first line in the sand drawn in the negotiations. Do you think it's fair of the NHL to ask for complete control over those, you know, key issues that aren't necessarily fiduciary in nature?
Well, first of all, that's the second big word, along with magnanimous, fiduciary. So, obviously, Drew's got quite the big brain over here. I don't even know what that was.
I think it was
clapping. That a shower?
Clapping, clapping.
Oh, that was clapping. Sounded like someone taking a shower. I think it's absolutely unfair. I mean, the NHLPA is a huge partner in this league. I mean, you can't ask for complete control of that, and that's pretty much asking for absolute power. So I think that's a completely unfair request. Odd timing during the CBA negotiations, but the NHLPA, I mean, we talked about Donald Fehr and, you know, his time as the head of the MLBPA, one big thing that he did was make the MLBPA a huge partner along with the owners and give them a lot more of a voice. So, you know, the NHLPA, of course, should have some type of input. I mean, these are the guys that are going out there and getting the job done on the ice. So they should definitely have some input.
I think generally I'd be okay with ownership dictating policy. I mean, it's their business. They're the ones who run it. They're the ones who this is their investment.
Partly that's my thinking. I agree with you there.
Generally I would.
Yeah.
The only thing I would think, though, is that the players do have a lot of interest in making this a better game.
But don't the owners also, to some degree, have interest in not overworking or creating unfair schedules for their team?
Well, you'd think so. You'd think that the players would know that their ownership group has their best interest in mind for the scheduling, you know,
and
fact.
realignment and travel and everything, and the playoff schedule, and all that.
You know, for example, the Red Wings, you know, wanting to be in the Eastern Conference. You know, that's a reason. Why would you do that? Because, of course, it's going to be easier travel-wise on your teams. You don't have to go to Vancouver. You don't have to go to L.A. You don't have to, you know, you'd still go to those cities, but you wouldn't go as often. So clearly, Mike Ilitch, for example, wants to do what's best. Now, of course, it's also what's best for his bottom line, right? If he's not traveling as much, he's not putting out as much. So the owners are always going to try and do what tries to make them the most money, which they're entitled to because they're a private business.
To me, I'm not totally comfortable with employees, in this case players, dictating how to run the business to employers.
That's right.
I don't think they're dictating. I think the owner is giving the players...
The problem is they should never have given them that leverage to begin with. They should never have made it to be a sort of... to be work in tandem to come up with these issues.
Well,
because once the players enjoy that taste of power, they never want to give it up.
Or if
you're going to give it up, you're going to give it up in order to get something in return.
But you see, I think there's a dichotomy here. There's a big word. I think there's old school thinking happening here. Why do we have to view this as owners, players, owners versus players? It's such an old school thinking that, oh, we're the owners of the team. We own the team, and this is employees. This is going back to the old, you know, working class versus the capital class. I mean, it's so stupid that we can't look at this as we are. The owners of a team and the players are a huge part of that, and we can seek their input. You want the players to be happy. You want your employees to be happy. And this isn't like a regular relationship where you have a small business and you have a few employees and you're going to make the decisions because you put the I mean, these guys are you know, it's not uncommon in professional sports for a player to become the owner of the team after.
But basically, you're being pragmatic, and that's the issue, right? Like, the truth is, and we see...
Another big word.
Well, we need a big word check. The amount of times I mention illegalcurve.com, your place to get all the latest Jets news.
Well, you're ubiquitous.
but anyways, you see these divides, and that's the problem, right? Is that there's nobody who's just being realistic, and we can and it won't, like, look at the way they talk to the press, look at the way they talk to the media.
Right.
You can see that they're just, it's so disingenuous, another big word, that they're just talking out of both sides of their face. They'll say one thing to the, you know, and then because they know that that's what your average fan wants to hear, so they say it. And everybody's like, oh, well, look, see, they're saying that.
Right.
But it's not the truth. And that's the reality, is that there's a lack of truth in this dialogue.
Right. You see, you know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly trotting out with their team of lawyers. And then you see on the other side, Donald Fehr coming out with, you know, his brother and the players. It's like one side versus the other. It's
like what happens when, you know, me and Ez square off against Dave and Rich, because they're the lawyers and me and Ez aren't. And it's, you know, it's the same sort
we're
of
the poor workers.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's like us dictating to our lawyers how to do their job.
But it's interesting, though, because one thing I can't, like, I actually am so tired of watching, like, you know, the NHLPA come out en masse and stand and do the photo op.
Right.
You know, it's so cliche at this point. Like, I can't take it anymore, because they're definitely not saying anything new, number one. But number two, it's just like, okay, you know, here we are, we're a unified union. Yes, we get it. Okay, you've got all the players there, some dressed in casual wear, some in suits. Like, it's just enough already. Just sit in a boardroom.
Do you really?
Meet,
I mean, you
and that's it.
The truth of the matter is, you'd rather not see these guys until they come up with a deal.
I'd rather see them wearing jerseys.
Well, obviously, but no. The players, I'm saying. But any of these people involved, you don't want them to run to the microphones after each and every meeting.
Because they're not saying anything anyways.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, this is what we see in this day and age. And we saw this. Everyone remembers in 2004 what was drawn out in the media, Bettman versus Goodnow. And this time around, it's not nearly as worse, in my opinion. But this is what we see. We see, tweets about the next meeting, and we see these they're basically photo ops. They don't say anything. But you're right. We have to go through this. That's the worst part. Not only are we going to possibly miss hockey, we have to, go through this mental, emotional roller coaster. And that's the worst part.
Good tweet from Jordan23 about the players versus owners in terms of the realignment. It says, the tricky part is the players are not only employees, they are also the quote-unquote product that the owners need to sell.
That's a good point. I agree with them.
Well, that's the whole point. Players have some skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They absolutely do. But they have a reason to see that this game is the best it can be.
I also can't believe that the owners and the players, the problem is you can't look at these things in vacuums. So there's so many other emotional factors that are affecting realignment or playoff format or things of that nature. But I can't believe that the two sides couldn't sit down and work out a mutually beneficial agreement there that sees both. I mean, the players obviously want to travel less. They want to not put as many miles or kilometers on their bodies in the course of the year. They also want to play, they don't necessarily want to play, so many back-to-back games. They want to limit it to this amount. They want to play, in these days, in these situations, and things of that nature. And the owners should want that the same for them as well. So both sides seem to want the same thing. They just haven't been able to figure out how to get there yet. And I think that's largely to do with all the other posturing that's going on. Like, once they come up with a solution to the, hockey-related revenue question and get that taken off the table, I think everything else, or the realignment for sure, should come relatively easily at that point in time.
Another way to look at it, too, is, these are organizations, and instead of looking at it as owners versus players, look at it like instead of the players being employees of the organization, the players are just part of the organization. That's an organization, and they don't look at it like that. And obviously, I know that because this is a multi-billion-dollar business, it's in pro sports, it's viewed as differently, and there's a lot at stake here. You're talking, when you talk about hockey-related revenue, you're talking about the owners wanting, hundreds of millions of dollars more of revenue to take because they believe the players have gotten too much over the last 8 years. So I realize that's the case. But going forward, I mean, I'm skeptical that anything is going to improve, and we might be in this situation 7 years ago. I think nobody can say that we won't be. I mean, look at what happened in the NFL and the NBA. There were short work stoppages, but that's the reality of pro sports. I mean, what you're talking about is each side believing they're worth a certain percentage of the pie. But when you talk about some of those other non-core economic issues, like you mentioned, the travel and the realignment, I think players have to be a huge part of it. And when you look at the NHL front office now and the amount of ex-players there are, Brendan Shanahan, Rob Blake, on and on, obviously players are ex-players are now a huge part of that corporate side of the NHL. But the players have to be, in my opinion, consulted. I think it's old school thinking to think that the owners should just make all the rules and the players are going to have to deal with it.
I'd agree with you there. Quickly, before we have to go to break, and we bring on Paul Edmonds for the illegal pitch baseball show segment coming up next. Some signings in the NHL. The first one is the Boston Bruins. They signed Brad Marchand to a contract extension, 4 years, $18 million. Dave, you're shaking your head.
55 points. I mean, he was 70th overall, and I understand what he brings, the grit, but it's just, to me, it's unbelievable.
Do the owners violate every one of their arguments when they go out and sign that contract?
Yeah, I mean, it's just inconceivable that Brad Marchand is making $4.5 million, not next season, but the season after. I mean, and it's unbelievable. But again, like
the
I
only
said,
thing I'm surprised about is that they didn't sign him to a 6-year deal. They might as well have signed him to a longer term deal to really put to shame their argument in terms of the CBA negotiations.
Yeah, Dave and I disagree a little bit about that. I fell in love with Brad Marchand, the on ice hockey player, obviously, during the World Junior Championships a few years back. He was a huge part of the 2010 Boston Bruins Stanley Cup winning team, 2011, sorry. And I think this contract is good for what he does. He had a career year, and he's going to be a huge part of that nucleus with Patrice Bergeron and Tyler Seguin and others. Dougie Hamilton's coming up. I like the contract.
Okay, why don't we leave it there? It's differing opinions. Those are perfectly permitted on this program. We'll go to break. We'll come back. We'll bring on Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes to talk about the Gold Eyes sweep of the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We put on our baseball hats next segment on TSN 1290. Shortly past 2:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, producer Remus, producer Tim. It's a party in the studio today. In addition to being hockey fans, we're obviously big baseball fans and the big Winnipeg Gold Eyes fans. Gold Eyes sweeping the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks yesterday, three games to winning the best of five, three games to none. They're off to the American Association final against the Wichita Wingnuts. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
It might be called the Hockey Show Hotline, but we might as well talk baseball. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Paul, how you doing this afternoon?
Not bad. I got up at the crack of noon today. That tells you a little bit about what went on last night. And, you know, I know that there was a little bit of a celebration, and I say a little bit last night. I think the Gold Eyes are pretty focused that this is only step two. But I think everybody pretty tired today, and including myself in a lot of ways. You know, when you do the travel and you're into every pitch like they are, and you're doing the games, it's pretty intense, guys. And, you know, you wake up like I did today, and it's kind of over, and you're kind of stiff, and your body's tired, and it's because it just has high drama to it, and you know, you're sitting on every pitch, because every pitch can mean something in that game or in that series, and just a real good way to wrap it up last night. It was a great night at the ballpark, and the place was electric, and I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, this is kind of when the excitement with the Jets last year and making a run toward the playoffs at the end, or when the Bombers are getting close, like going to the Grey Cup last year. I mean, everybody's into it, the city's into it, and there's a real buzz, and it's really good to see, and it's really fun to be part of. But like I said, there's another big step to go, and we'll see if the Gold Eyes can summit the mountain sometime next weekend in Wichita.
Before we get to the actual game action, you know, I was listening to the post-game show yesterday, and you know, when you're interviewing Coach Forney, you could really hear the emotion in his voice. It sounded like, you know, this is finally that hurdle that, you know, he's been faced with for the last 6-7 years, and he was finally able to step over that hurdle, defeat, you know, the team's arch nemesis in the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. You know, how big on a personal note do you think that was to Coach Forney?
Well, you know, Drew, I think that you heard it in his voice. You know, this kind of let me back up here a little bit. This is a very interesting position that managers at this level in independent baseball are put into, because not only are you managing the team, not only are you managing personalities, not only are you managing the game, your bullpen, your players, injuries, but you build the team from scratch. And then when you have some players leave for whatever reason, they don't pan out, a guy gets picked up by an affiliated organization, or a guy ends up leaving for Mexico, or somebody gets hurt and can't continue to play, you've got to be able to reach into your, and you need to have a vast network to be able to get another guy, and or three. And I think the biggest part of this whole thing is to be able to build the team and then keep the team together with some replacement guys as you go along, plus the whole management thing. So it's not like Major League Baseball. It's not like affiliated Major League Baseball where you go and manage the team and some farm director set that team or the 22-man or 23-man roster out for you. It's all one big responsibility on the shoulders of one man. And like it or not, when it doesn't get done, there's a lot of criticism that can be placed squarely on one person, in this case, Rick Forney. And you go to 2006, his first year, and he had a pretty good team here, and they go up 2-0 in Fargo and come back home and lose both games and then go down to Fargo for Game 5 and lose Game 5. You lose in 5 in the first round to Gary the next year in 07. You get beaten 4 to Gary in 08. You lose in 5 basically on an error from a pitcher in Chris Homer to Fargo in 09. You don't make the playoffs in 2010. Last year, you end up winning the North and you lose to the wild card team in 5 in the bottom of the ninth on an error. So, you know, a lot of people, I think, were frustrated with the fact the baseball club hadn't had the success it had in the 90s and early 2000s. And because Rick had kind of been stymied through getting the team to the next round, there was some criticism on him, rightly or wrongly, I think. But certainly it wasn't Rick's fault that Chris Homer makes an error in 09 or Lou Ott does last year in the bottom of the ninth. And I just think that the weight of the world was lifted off him and certainly Tom Vaith and a few other people that are really influential in what Rick does Andrew Collier, the general manager, for sure, to know that Rick was on the right path all the way along since he took the job over from Hal Lanier in 2006, and he built good teams, and for whatever reason, and a little bit of luck factors in there, he never got past that first round. Well, he finally did, and you could hear it in his voice yesterday. He got pretty verklempt, and I wouldn't have been surprised if, you know, he was kind of choking back a tear or two. So in that regard, you know, you heard the emotion in his voice, and I'm just so happy for the organization. I'm happy for the city and the province, but mostly I'm really happy for Rick Forney because the guy works his tail off to build a winning team and put a good product on the field every year, and he's finally been rewarded.
The strength of the Goldeyes for the obviously in the sweep had to begin with the starting pitching, and we thought that was going to be a strength coming into the series. Ace Walker, Chris Salameda, Matt Rush last night. You know, talk about the pitching that the Goldeyes had and how much of an influence that had in the sweep.
Well, I think that everybody knew when they broke camp around the middle of May that they were going to have a pretty good rotation if everybody stayed healthy. You factor in the fact they had a real good left-hander in Fabian Williamson here, too, that got picked up by the Atlanta Braves. And it wasn't just a 1-2 or a 1-2-3 punch. It was a 1-2-3-4. Well, Fabian got picked up. You got Todd Privett in here, and he really kind of factored in nicely. But your big three, your trifecta, if you will, were Ace and Chris and Matt. And I think the way the rotation set up going into the playoffs, you've had two guys that have been here for quite a while. Ace Walker for 5 years, Salameda for his third. They've all had playoff experience here. They've all had success at this level. Plus, you bring in Matt Rush, whose numbers speak for themselves, and he won a championship in Quebec. And if that's your third starter, or you can mix and match them whichever way you want to go, if you guys like the track and you want the trifecta, take the $1 triacta box with that rotation, and you're going to be all right. You know, 1-2-3 or 2-3-1, whichever way you want to go with it. I think that the whole thing boiled down to the fact that the Goldeyes could match anybody 1-2-3 in the rotation, and as a result, all three guys pitched great. You know, Ace Walker he walked six guys in the first game, but battled through that. Chris Salameda gave up a three-run home run to Delgado in game two. Winnipeg battled back, but he kept them in there. Those guys kept them in there and kept it close. Rush struggled a little bit out of the gate last night, but he settled in. And once you get to a point where you settle in as a pitcher, especially a starter, and you can eat up those six and two-thirds innings, well, all Rick had to do was really turn it over to a couple guys in the bullpen like Baldwin, Allen, and then, of course, what Brian Boyning did. And it really shortens the game down. And once you get a lead, as they did late in games, in all three of them, it just made it a little bit easier and much more manageable to manage. But the starting pitching, it started and ended, for me, with the Goldeyes success in three straight games right there with those three guys. And all of them have great, great pedigree, great past performance sheets, and a lot of playoff experience. And I really think it bode well for Winnipeg entering the series. And we saw, as a result, what happened because of it.
Paul, Amos Ramon had a big home run there in Game 1, and then he had another big hit last night in Game 3. Is he becoming Mr. Clutch for the Winnipeg Goldeyes?
I asked Ezzie last night, Rick, if there was a defining moment in the three games, now that he could kind of squarely analyze it afterward. And he said, no question about it, the home run by Amos on Wednesday night in Game 1, the two-run shot that gave the Goldeyes the lead was clearly the defining moment and the biggest play that the Goldeyes had in that series. It kick-started the offense for them. I know he was happy. If you really wanted to pick a series MVP, and I know that they don't have that, but you could make an argument for Amos, and you could certainly make an argument for Brian Boyning, and if you went with one over the other, I don't think a lot of people would have a problem with that. I think both those two guys, from the pitching standpoint, Brian definitely, and from kickstarting the offense that first night with a 4-for-4 night, a big two-run home run, 3 RBI, another big hit last night. He gobbled up everything over at third base. I thought Amos had a great series. And, you know, the other thing for Amos, too, is he's been connected to this town since 2006 when he played for the Gold Eyes for the first time. He lives here now. He and his wife are building a house in southeast Winnipeg. She's from town here. She's a Winnipegger, born and bred. And you know, he's part of the whole thing here. He gets it. He wants to win it for the community and the sports fan here. And I couldn't be more pleased for a guy like Amos, because he really delivered and he really stepped up his game. And as you know, when you get into sports and this time of year, in whatever sport it is, you're always looking for your best players to be your best players. You're looking for a couple of guys to really step up. And if that's your best players, great, because they're expected to do that. But if you're really looking toward a championship, you have to have what has maybe been termed subordinate roles through the season. One or two of those guys really kick it up a notch to really complement what you're going to get from your better players. And Amos has been good all year, but Amos has taken it to another level, as he and I've been very surprised that he's enjoyed the moment. Boy, he's relishing every single moment of it. And the celebration that he had after that home run on Wednesday night got everybody going, and I think it just kind of rolled from there. But Amos has really stepped up to a new level, and hopefully that continues for the organization and for the team into Wichita starting on Tuesday.
Paul, now what about the fans at Shaw Park? What was the emotion like in the stadium last night?
Electric. Absolutely electric, Dave. I just first off, I think everybody was a little tempered last night. The first couple of innings, then Fargo gets a run in the top of the first with two outs, and you're thinking, oh boy, you know, here they go, and the Gold Eyes, and I think everybody was a little bit nervous, and you're wondering if the Gold Eyes are going to be able to, for a third straight night, because Fargo had taken the lead, opened up the scoring in all three games, including last night, and you're wondering if the Gold Eyes have to go to the well again to try to play catch-up. Well, they did. They got an error on the first baseman, Marcos Rodriguez, that kind to help things along, and then the big hit by Amos. But as the game rolled along, and especially after the Gold Eyes took the lead in that four-run fourth inning, the place got you could just feel the electricity build in that place. And I was so proud of the fans last night. The Gold Eyes went 1-2-3 in the bottom of the eighth inning, and then as they took the field for the ninth, and they're three outs away are the Gold Eyes from winning the first round championship, and Fargo stepping to the plate, everybody, 5,025, got on their feet, save for about the seven or eight Fargo fans that were there last night. They were the only ones sitting still, but everybody got on their feet, and they stood and applauded every strike. They were right into it. It was so much fun to be a part of and to look around, and you say to yourself, you know, we're quiet, we're reserved, we're polite, as Canadian fans usually are, but it didn't surprise me, but I was proud to say that we know a lot more about the game of baseball than I think we give ourselves credit for, and when to cheer and what to do, and it was real exciting last night. I know the players fed off of it, and I know that everybody that went to the game wanted to see the Gold Eyes do exactly what they did last night, and it was very celebratory, and let's hope that there's a couple of real good crowds on Tuesday and Wednesday night when they open up in the finals. But it was the place to be last night, and it was a lot of fun.
About 90 seconds to go, Paul. Gold Eyes against the Wichita Wingnuts. It starts, like you said, Tuesday, Wednesday, the first two games at Shaw Park. You know, what do we know about the Wingnuts? What do the Gold Eyes know about them? And, you know, who are the key difference makers on that squad?
Okay, a couple of little quick things here. The Gold Eyes took both series from Wichita, down there 2-3 and up here 2-3 over the regular season. Having said that, both times the Gold Eyes played the Wichita Wingnuts, they had three of their best players playing down in Mexico. Jake Calaleo, who led the league in batting average this year with a .373 batting average. One of their better home run hitters, and C.J. Ziegler was down there as well, and James Hoyt in the back end of their bullpen. So the Gold Eyes never saw those guys at all, and they're back from Mexico. They helped Wichita get into the playoffs. They helped them beat Laredo in three straight. So it'll be a different Wichita team, but real quick, I think the Wichita Wingnuts and the Winnipeg Gold Eyes match up clearly, almost mirrors of each other in terms of good starting pitching, good bullpens, and some guys that can provide some offense. They're a good organization, good team. It should be a lot of fun, and I don't think anybody should expect any sort of a sweep out of this one. I think it probably goes the distance.
Game 5, you'll hear them all here on TSN 1290. It starts Tuesday night with the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, Paul Edmonds. Paul, thanks very much. We'll let you get some tea into that sore throat of yours so that you'll be back to full strength for Tuesday.
a little hot toddy, boys. Maybe tonight to celebrate. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate
Thanks,
the time, and go fish.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. Take care, Paul. Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up with one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Manuk, filling in for Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, producer Tim. It is a full party here. We just heard from Paul Edmonds talk a little Goldeyes while we have the opportunity. It's not every day that a Winnipeg team gets to make it to a championship game, but the Goldeyes are there, and best of luck to the Goldeyes ahead of Tuesday night's contest.
I got to say, we all know how good Paul Edmonds is, and, you know, we weren't able to be at the game. Well, I wasn't, and Remus wasn't. We were playing hockey last night.
You guys
were
winning your own championship.
Right after, when I was listening on the radio and just on Twitter, you know, everybody's so happy for the Goldeyes, and everybody's tweeting, listen to Paul Edmonds, because everyone has such respect for Paul Edmonds and the job he does on this station. It was great to have him on.
No argument there. Let's go. One final segment.
Rapid fire.
We'll start off rapid fire with the confirmation. I'm not sure really why this is a news story, but have it anyways. The confirmation that the Nashville Predators do not have no trade clause in Shea Weber's contract. Except for the next season, he cannot be traded because that's part of the CBA rules. Right. But after that, he is able to be traded by the Nashville Predators. There is no trade clause. How many years do you think Shea Weber lasts as a Nashville Predator, given the terms of his contract?
But he has the no trade clause.
No trade clause.
I'm kidding. Oh. You said no trade clause, so I was going to ask you, you know, what does that mean? Does he have a trade?
There is no trade clause.
I'm bugging you. I kid. But it's really hard to say because I wasn't expecting Shea Weber to. I wasn't expecting the Nashville Predators to match that contract. It was structured in a way, you know, so that they wouldn't match. And obviously, now it's coming out 6 weeks or whatever later that, you know, there isn't a no trade clause. But, you know, it's probably not going to be longer than 3 or 4 years. I mean, Shea Weber is now part of a team that doesn't have Ryan Suter, that has a forward group that, you know, isn't very good. They obviously huge, disappointment last season. Some of the players they picked up, Radulov and Kostitsyn and Sergei Kostitsyn not coming back. And you know what? I don't know. It's a tough question to ask, but
give me a year
to answer. But it's probably going to be less than 6 years. I mean, I could see him being traded within the next 3 or 4 years because Nashville is a team. I think their window for being a contender has quickly evaporated with no Ryan Suter. I think that's how impactful he is as a defenseman.
As he puts the rapid in rapid fire, let's put it that way.
No kidding.
I'm going to go. Oh, Reem liked that one. I think we're going to go 3 years. 3 years max. I think he'll be wearing a Rangers or a Flyers jersey before it's all said and done.
Not Red Wings?
Well, it could be the
Maybe
Wings.
Maybe the Canucks. He's from BC.
Could be the Wings. Yeah, I mean, it could be. But I just, you know, when it comes to ridiculous contracts, I think New York Rangers. So I could see the Rangers being in play for that.
Fair enough. We will move along in rapid fire. ESPN, the magazine, has named the Toronto Maple Leafs as the worst team in major sports. I'm not going to get into the... let's put it this way. They've used a very bizarre set of rankings in order to come up with this formula. Are you concerned that the Toronto Maple Leafs are named the worst team in sports using junk science? Or are you just happy to see the Maple Leafs being insulted on a national stage?
I'm excited to see them being embarrassed on a national stage. You know, I think there was 121 teams.
120. There's 122.
122. Winnipeg was 91. So obviously, that's more of a concern to me. They should be number one on that list.
Yeah.
But
number one in your heart.
Yeah, of course. No, I mean, you know what? These rankings are funny, and the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs are last is just good for us Winnipeggers who always have this inferiority complex out here in the prairies. So it's good for us to have that to hold against them.
I think that they're probably, you know, they should deserve a first ranking based on the fact that how much money they make. But, I mean, in terms of actual, the reality is they haven't won a championship in so long that it's...
Since 1967.
It is a bit of a joke. They are a bit of a joke because you can't... I don't know how you can make that much money and be that poorly run that you can't provide your city with a championship team. It doesn't make sense.
The NHL 13 is set to come out. I believe a preview of it has come out online or something along along those lines. Remus, you're the gamer amongst us here.
Yeah, I got the demo. Okay. I pre-ordered it.
There you go.
Monday at midnight.
Now the question is, will you be going to the Evander Kane signing?
No, I won't be going.
I might go to the EB Games as Michael Remus is going to get his game and go for the Michael Remus signing.
Interesting. Anyways, Drew,
they come out with the soundtrack of about a dozen or 14 songs that are going to be appearing in the game. If you could pick one song, relatively new song, what song would you like to hear in NHL 13?
Jump by Van Halen. I know it's not relatively new, but okay, as you go, I'll think about it.
I looked at that list of new music
for the
NHL.
Record, I've heard of almost none of the songs.
There's what's one of the the Offspring are on there. I think Gaslight Anthem is on there.
Yeah.
The one that I liked was Classified. He's a rapper from the Maritimes. I like that one. If one song I'd like to hear, I don't know. I mean, one of the bands I really like now is the Black Keys, so maybe something off of their new album. But a lot of that music, I think, is kind of, not very good in my opinion.
I think maybe I'll go with "Call Me Maybe" by Carly Rae Jepsen. I mean,
it's a great song.
That could be my song.
Or "Baby" by Justin Bieber. That's classic. You know. That's classic rock right there.
You know, in these games, I put in my own music actually, but I would put in "Lonely Boy" by the Black Keys. I think the Rangers went out to it in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Hang on, you can upload your own music into these games?
Yeah, I can put on my own music on Xbox. It's great.
I'm just glad that there's a band called Zombie Nation that have a song called Kerncraft 400.
Oh, that's a classic arena song. You've heard it before. I think the Bruins use it as their goal song before.
Yeah, because it's the stadium chant mix, and I don't know what the song is.
If you want to know music and it's connected to an arena, Michael Remus is your man.
I did have that article last year at Behind the Music Winnipeg, Jeff.
Great, great article.
Yeah, exactly. You can tweet that out sometime. Last question here on Rapid Fire. Dion Phaneuf is now engaged to Alicia Cuthbert. What was Sean Avery's reaction to this? And keep it clean.
Because we've talked to Sean Avery about this. I don't know what Sean Avery's reaction to this is, but my reaction to this is I don't care at all. So that's my reaction.
I'm going to stick with Ez on this one. I couldn't even fathom. I could imagine what he would say, but I would, as you said, none of it would be clean and it wouldn't be repeatable on air.
Terrible.
He's
terrible
actually already been suspended, but for his thoughts. Yeah, that's how bad it was.
Terrible rapid fire topic.
That was not that terrible.
This isn't TMZ, Drew. Come on.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something
surprisingly not good.
You complain about my rapid-fire topics, you can make up for it in cheers and jeers.
I'm going to cheer the Winnipeg Goldeyes for winning their series yesterday. Paul Edmonds came on, so good for them. Hopefully they can keep it going here.
I thought you were going to cheer yourself again for winning the...
Cheer to the Carls. Cheer to the Carls for winning Division 2A. Championship last night.
Yeah,
all the boys. Richie wasn't able to experience it, but Remus and I.
Worth pointing out, though, Richie did have a hat trick in the semifinal game.
He did. I was telling
Richie.
Pivotal
game.
Yeah, it was a pivotal game. Richie gave a Joe Carter-esque performance.
Nice. Interesting. Dave?
We got to let the music finish.
There you go.
It would have gone on for 5 minutes.
Yeah. My cheer is going to go out to Al Montoya's new mask. The Winnipeg Jets backup goaltender has a new mask.
Looks great.
It looks fantastic. If you haven't seen it, go to illegalcurve.com, today's morning papers. It is a feature picture. And there's a link to In Goal Magazine, which did a feature article on it. And there are two to four pictures of the mask as well from different angles. It's really interesting the way he came up with it. Some of his Cuban history is tied to it. So it's kind of cool. You want to check it out. Some Jets-related news for fans out there who want to listen to or want to see something Jets-related.
Hopefully Al Montoya's mask will last longer than Chris Mason's Jets pads did.
Good point.
Yeah, that was a...
Fair enough.
And I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer what's been going on in Russia. Not very many people are aware of it, but in the lead up, given that, again, 40th anniversary of the Summit Series, 25th anniversary of the 87 Canada Cup, and the year anniversary of the tragedy involving the Locomotive team, a lot of hockey players, famous hockey players, Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, and Brett Hull have all been playing in some charity tournaments over in Russia. Gretzky said it was one of his biggest regrets of his career that he was never able to play a real game, a real meaningful game in Russia. He's now been able to do that all in the name of charity. So kudos to everybody involved with that, raising money for that good cause and supporting the Locomotive team on the year anniversary of that tragedy. That is it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today. A big thank you to our guests. Kalen Qualley of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program, Bill Lindsay, the Florida Panthers television analyst, Paul Edmonds of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, and Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Cheer Bar and Grill, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get a sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Remus and producer Tim, I'm Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.